You are looking live at Chicken Dinner.
I bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
I think I'll take two chickens.
You're on riverboat gambling trips.
You're gonna die for some chickens.
Hey, what's your chicken dinner?
Someone is.
It was feathers yesterday. There was no chicken.
What you got riding on this game?
My daughter.
What a gambler.
It's Chicken Dinner.
Hey, Babalugas, we got a bet here.
Here's your host, Sam Panionovich.
It's called Winner, Winner, Chicken Dinner right there, boys.
Let's get this thing going.
Winner, Winner, Chicken Dinner. How about that?
Away we go. Chicken Dinner Tuesday, May 10th, 2022. Follow on Twitter at ChickenXDinner. DM's always open for you. And smash the button so you get a new podcast once it drops. We will talk to John Hyslop from Odds Checker. John loves the prop bets, and that's most of what he bets. We're talking like 95% of what John bets on a day-to-day basis is the props. So we'll dive inside his thought process on those, names over numbers, and a bet he absolutely loves on Tuesday night. Jason Tatum last night, what are you going to do? Under 28.5 points, he was erratic again from the floor, didn't look good, contested shots. He was 11 of 24 from the floor, 3 of 10 from 3, got to the line 6 times, made 5, but that's enough to go over 28.5. He had 8 at the half, 6 minutes to go in the game. He's got 20, lands on 30, and like clockwork, goes over the 28.5. The DM, nice call on Tatum. I'm like, ugh. If you don't get it, you just don't get it. This is gambling. And this is why this stuff is so hard. Loved the bet. Loved the handicap. Thought the X's and O's were in our favor. He's getting doubled again every time he touches the ball. And when he drives to the basket, they bring the big tree to help the cut to the cup. He was taking and bricking so many tough shots. But the problem with a guy like Tatum and any of these superstars, really, Doncic, Steph Curry, Tatum, when LeBron's in the playoffs, guys like that, they have so much volume that even a bad day from the floor can still get them over the total. And that's what happened. You tip your cap to Jason Tatum. More importantly, tip your cap to the Boston Celtics. 116 to 108, they beat the Bucks. Series tied 2-2. And now back to Boston for 5. Milwaukee will have game 6. And if possible, game 7 at TD Garden. Series price, right back where we started. First price I saw in Las Vegas, Jeff Sherman at the Westgate, opened up Boston minus 200, Milwaukee plus 175. That is the same price it is right now. Right back where we started. Every single year this happens, at least to me. I'll speak for myself, but if you bet on sports, this probably happens to you as well. We fall for it first week of May every single year. We know we're going to lose, but we load our accounts anyway, our TVGs, our Twin Spires. We get pumped for a race with 20 horses that really nobody knows what's going to happen. The Kentucky Derby. And I felt good. I talked to all the right people. Kirk Rockwell gave us White Abario at 40-1 in March. Horse goes off about 10-1. Good bet. Beat the closing line by $30. 40-10. Horse doesn't even finish in the top 10. All these people, Zandon, Messier, Epicenter, proves how tough horse racing is when a horse that was 80-1 wins the Derby. I was watching it naturally at a wedding on somebody's iPhone, turned to the side and laid against a couple of drinks. It was right at the beginning of the reception where everybody started sitting down to eat their salads and then get their plates and go up to the buffet at the wedding. But 6:55, I start getting the itch. I'm like, all right, I'm going to go outside and pull this radio broadcast up because I didn't have the video. I had the radio. Well, as I get through the reception hall and turn around the corner, there's four guys, all groomsmen in the wedding, that have this setup with the phone turned to the side, and they're like, they all have different horses. One had Tiz the Bomb. One had Messier. Another one had Mo Donegal. The point is, everybody you listen to and everybody you talk to leading up to the race is on a horse that is not Rich Strike. Well, that's because Rich Strike was added on Friday. That's how hard horse racing is. The improbability to predict that race right. 1, 2, 3, win, place, show. And we're all watching the horses come around, and, you know, here comes the 3, here comes the 10. You know, that was looking like that was going to be a very nice, you know, exacta box, the 3 and the 10. Rich Strike ran like the favorite. That's what you take away from this. Not that, oh, this horse is juiced up or this or that or that. This horse down the stretch ran like the favorite. And that's why it won. And the reactions on Twitter are just hysterical. Twitter, as I've often said, during a big sporting event, Super Bowl, NBA Finals, NCAA National Championship, a lot of great reactions on Twitter. Amazing second or third screen for you. So I'm looking at Twitter after Rich Strike wins the race at 80-1. Steve Kornacki, at Steve Kornacki. Are you kidding me? Field Yates, Rich Strike, 80-1 odds. Just became the second longest shot to ever win the Kentucky Derby. What a race. Kelly Stewart, at Kelly in Vegas. Rich Strike just killed my exacta. Was as high as 200-1 in some Las Vegas shops. Wow. Chris Felica, this is a public service announcement. Never bet the Kentucky Derby again. A bigger joke result than mind that bird. Which earned a response from Paul Matart. All the thousands of tips and who to bet, yada, yada, and the experts all giving their 2 cents, all worthless info. How much money lost on all the advice? Very true. Very true. Let's see. There were some more tweets. Oh, Danny Wysocki, who's an executive producer at NBC Sports Chicago. She tweeted, "My dad's winning Kentucky Derby ticket. Hashtag Rich Strike. He picked for the Venezuelan jockey." Venezuelan flag, Venezuelan flag. Hashtag Viva. It's a $38 exacta box with the 21 and every other horse. So 21/1 through 19. It's 19 bets. Danny's dad wins the exacta. I text her, like, what the hell? She just said, yeah! Unreal. How much did it pay? $4,100. Because the jockey is Venezuelan. That's it. Joe Ostrowski last year, he was kicking himself because his daughter wanted the pink horse. She's like, ooh, the pink horse. And the pink horse ends up winning the race. We overthink it so much as betting analysts. It is one race, one time a year. Horse handicappers, odds are against them to get this right. Kirk Rockwell, guys like that, they're going to win 27% of their horse bets. Maybe 30. And that is an amazing horse handicapper. Let's just understand the hilarity of the situation. All the work, all the homework, all the interviews, all the podcasts, and it's somebody's dad betting on the 21 horse because he's the Venezuelan jockey. That guy wins and you lost. It's fun. It's funny to me. Rich Strike the winner, Epicenter 2, Zandon 3, Simplification 4, and Mo Donegal finishing 5. How about this too? Nick Papagiorgio on Twitter. Spending Mother's Day weekend with mom. She asked me to bet $2 on Rich Strike simply because she feels sorry he had the longest odds at 80-1. Hashtag Kentucky Derby. And the last one, my buddy Chris Thurston, who's been on this podcast. His mom, Val, wanted him to put $50 on Rich Strike at 80-1. He told her she should just flush it down the toilet instead. Well, she put it in, and Chris said, thank God I put in the bet. I almost held my own mother's bet. That's the Kentucky Derby. That's unbelievable. A $1 exacta paid $2,000. A 50-cent trifecta paid $7,400. A dollar superfecta paid $321,000. A dollar super high five paid $741,000. And a dollar daily double, $1,364. A long shot crashes the party. That's what the odds do. I also saw this tweet from Mitch Moss. Rich Strike wasn't in the field until Friday. stared down the leaders, chased them down, won, then bit everything in sight. Like the guy who can't talk from being so drunk at 3 a.m., showing up to the softball field for an 8 a.m. first pitch to crack some cold ones and hit three dingers. Scene. That's the Kentucky Derby 2022. Jarrett Bailey tweeted this out, at Jarrett Bailey NFL. Apparently, this new tier maker is a trend on social media where you can make your own tiers of different things. I have seen football teams. I have seen restaurants, movies, video games, you name it. It's a new thing. So Jarrett Bailey, who does some work in media around the NFL, tweeted his tier maker. And at the top, Super Bowl favorites, Bills, Bengals, Rams. Bengals are not a Super Bowl favorite, but we keep going. Super Bowl contenders, Broncos, Packers, Chargers, Bucks, Chiefs. Not many arguments there. Playoff teams, Cardinals, Colts, Raiders, Commanders, Vikings, Giants. I do think the Giants are a fringe playoff team. Just miss playoffs. Ravens, Browns, Niners, Steelers, Cowboys, Titans. Wild card contenders, Dolphins, Patriots, Jets, Saints, Panthers. 5-7 wins, Bears, Jaguars, Lions, Texans, Eagles. Disagree there. Wait a minute. So the Eagles are three tiers down? Two tiers down from the Giants. Well, no, three tiers down. Because if the Giants are in tier three, wildcard contenders are four, just missed playoffs are five, 5-7 wins is six. The Giants are not three tiers better than the Eagles. That just ain't right. And then the potential number one pick, the Falcons and the Seahawks. The good thing is we can take betting odds and sort of poo-poo this theory. But remember, these are people that are betting on football and betting future books. So people like this are affecting the way the market is. Bengals are not a Super Bowl favorite. I don't think the Commanders are a football team. Don't think the Giants are a football team yet. I'm going to give Brian Daboll some time. I'm very high on the Ravens this year. And I've talked to Eric Eager quite a bit about this. Metrically, they do so many things right. And John Harbaugh perennially drafts the right players and develops them right, puts them in. They're always good on special teams, always strong on defense. Lamar Jackson was hurt a lot last year. So that's a team, I think, given the hype on the Bengals, the lore for the Steelers, who remember going into this season without Ben Roethlisberger, have Mitchell Trubisky or Kenny Pickett at quarterback, and then the Browns with Deshaun Watson, and who knows what the hell is going to happen there. I feel like the Ravens are underrated heading into 2022, and that's a team I'll look to bet over on the win total. It's a team I'll look to win the division, and I will also look to bet them probably early in this season, weeks 1, 2, 3, and 4. I feel like the market will be down and perception will be down on the Baltimore Ravens. So that was just interesting to see that tier maker and then just react to that. And it makes me love the Ravens even more. So there we go. Eagles Super Bowl liability is building now. I talked about this after the draft. I like their win total over. But there's a difference between the win total over, winning the division, winning the conference, and winning the Super Bowl. This was an alert I got from Fox Sports, a story, the headline. Surprising team attracting early betting action to win Super Bowl. That's the headline. Inside that story, a quote from Fox Bet trader AJ Devine. The Eagles, quote, have taken more money than any other team since the 2022 NFL draft. Devine went on to add, while we expect them to be better this season, we still have the Cowboys as prohibitive favorites to win the NFC East. However, the Eagles should have enough to get to the playoffs and maybe make a run. It's also worth noting that Fox Bet is only in four states: Colorado, New Jersey, Michigan, Pennsylvania. Every book gets different action because of where they're based and how many different operations they have. So Foxbet is liable on the Eagles. Still think they had one of the better drafts. Traded for A.J. Brown, a number one wide receiver, to pair along with Devontae Smith and Jalen Reagor and those cats in the receiver room. Miles Sanders at running back, a good offensive line, a pretty solid defense, which just added defensive tackle Jordan Davis and linebacker N'Kobe Dean from Georgia. Great draft. But I'm not betting them to win the Super Bowl. I think you have to curb your bets with realistic stuff. Look, if you want to throw $25, $100 on the Eagles to win the Super Bowl, by all means, go for it. But I mean, are they really winning the Super Bowl? Like the win total over. Like the division. Are they getting through the NFC? They're still dogs against the Rams, the Bucks, and the Packers. I know the Packers, many people are down on the Packers because Devontae Adams goes to Vegas, but it's Aaron Rodgers, and Aaron Rodgers more times than not makes his receivers than the receivers make Aaron Rodgers. So I'm not buying this Eagles to win the Super Bowl, but that's from one sports book. Philadelphia, the most bets since the NFL draft to win the whole thing. Two more quick things before we get to John Hyslop. White Sox now minus money everywhere to win the AL Central. I'm kicking myself for not taking plus 125, plus 120. Now it's minus money everywhere. Minus 105 at Fox Bet, minus 110, Caesars DraftKings points bet, minus 15, BetMGM FanDuel, minus a quarter at Caesars, minus 134 at Rivers, minus 140, Bet365. That didn't take long. I think I tweeted that out on Saturday or Sunday. And here we are, Monday morning. Well, it was Monday morning when all the books recalibrated and put up their new prices. Every book was minus money, and now they've even ran a little bit more. I'll die on this hill. No team in that division has more talent or more potential than the Chicago White Sox. And even at minus 110, that's a relatively great bet given where it was before the season. Minus 200, minus 250, minus 290. That was the range of future prices on the White Sox. Now, they were not healthy early in the season. They are getting healthier, though. If they're healthy, they're winning the division. Yes, I saw what happened Monday night when they blew a huge lead in the ninth, and Naylor from the Guardians had two homers and, what, eight RBIs after the eighth inning or something like that. But they also just won six in a row. 6-1 last seven is more important to me than losing a game at home you should have won. That team, if they're healthy, I'll say it again, they're not losing this division. And the books know they should be favored. Chicago underachieved. Minnesota has overachieved. If they both get to the middle ground where they're both playing to their potential, well, not their potential, playing to the median, playing to the middle, the White Sox are winning the division. If the White Sox overachieve and the Twins overachieve, the White Sox are winning this division. The only way the White Sox lose this division, aside from injuries, is if they underachieve immensely and the Twins overachieve immensely. And tell me you're not going to bet White Sox at minus 110? Come on. The Red Sox unders were 3-0 over the weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. 27-2 to the under now. 20-0, 7-2. 74%. And the movement is getting real. Look at the sheet every single day. You look up in the morning, Red Sox total is 8. By the first pitch, 7.5 juice to the under or 7. 8.5 turn into 8s, turn into 7.5s. The movement today, Red Sox and Braves, Whitlock on the hill against Wright. Total opened 8. At tape time here, mostly 7.5 juice to the under, minus 120, 25, 30. And here come the 7s popping offshore. Garrett Whitlock on the hill. We'll talk about him more in just a little bit with John Hyslop. That is a team, when the offense struggles and the starting pitching prevails, that's an under team, and the professional money is going to hit these numbers early, and they're going to run them down. If you see that market start to trend down, got to act. You see those 8s turn into 7.5s, got to act. All of a sudden, 7.5 everywhere, juice to the under. You could have went under, forget missing 8, you could have gone under 7.5 flat. Now you're laying 130 to go under 7.5. or you're laying, what, plus 100 to go under 7. But don't think every half run doesn't matter in a game total between 7 and 8. And the last thing, let's go Minnesota Wild. 2-2 series right now. We got a minus 130 to win the series and advance into the next round. Alex Smith does love the Wild puck line tonight, if you're feeling froggy about that. Rather than lay the price on them to win the game, which I believe was minus 140 or minus 150, he's going to lay the puck and a half and turn that minus into a plus. You can get plus 160 on the Minnesota Wild. I'm interested. I'll probably make a little flyer bet on that. But as for our show, not going to do anything crazy. Just going to ride that series bet. Minnesota Wild, minus 130. Best of three right now. Game 5 at home, game 7 at home. You're the favorite in two of those games. Take care of business. Let's go treat. Joining us on Chicken Dinner for the first time, and he's been one of my favorite follows to pay attention to, especially in the mornings when I start my day, John Hyslop at Slop Rules on Twitter from Odds Checker. I'm telling you, man, your gambling positivity tweets, when I roll out of bed, I pull the phone out, slide through a couple tweets, and it's you giving me something like, hey, it's a new day to make some money. They literally start me off on the right foot.
That's the goal, man. That's when you want to start thinking about gambling, right? As soon as you wake up.
I guess that's what we're going with, but it's just, it's something where, you know, because there's a lot of negativity on Twitter, especially in gambling Twitter, and there's a lot of this touty-like behavior when every time you win a bet, people tweet out a green check. When people lose, they don't send out anything. We just ignore that and move on. You set the tone from day one, and I feel like that's something that you're doing when you either start to handicap your games or when you're just about to handicap your games. Am I onto something?
Yeah, generally it's when I wake up, when I'm starting to look at lines, so I'll grab my phone in the morning, start looking at lines. That's just my thought. Then you move on to maybe eating breakfast while you're still looking at lines, and then you're handicapping games. So pretty much, yeah, you're right.
How did you get into this whole sports betting side of things? Like, when did it start for you? Everybody has a different path and a different trek into it. I love to ask this question for people that I talk to for the first time because everybody has a different beginning. How did it start for you?
I don't even know. I think there was a – I used to be a bartender, like, in college. At first, I mean, it was – probably I was, like, 21 maybe. This guy, his name was James Brown. That was his real name. And James had parlay cards. So I didn't really know what the hell parlay cards were. You know, I mean, there was internet back then, but like there was no smartphones or anything like that. So we weren't just like, gambling wasn't just like in your face all the time. So this was how you do it. You would just fill out your card, give it back to him with your cash, and then he would never come back because you'd never win. But, but you think, you know what I mean? But like you would think that would be how it would go, is he would give something back. But, yeah, that was the first time I was really, like, regularly gambling, and then it just kind of went from there. You started to realize that parlay cards suck, so you might want to not do parlays, like, exclusively. But, yeah, that was pretty much it. After that, I mean, it just got out of control. It was awesome.
Got out of control, huh?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, anybody that has actually been through the gambling experience, it would start with, you know, like your little parlay cards, like you're going to win, right? Like that's all you think. And then you would go into like straight bets. And now you're betting, you know, a little bit bigger. You're betting way more than you can afford to lose, because that's just what you do when you're that young. I mean, you're dumb. You don't get it. And then you either quit or you realize that you need to maybe get a unit system or something like that before you go broke.
I always say that there are two ways to become good at betting on sports. Number one, you either worked for a book or you had access to bad players. And those are sort of correlated. Like if you were running numbers or helping somebody, if you were an envelope person and you had people that played into your accounts and you could see what the bad bettors did and sort of build backwards, if that makes any sense. Like there are people that started taking bets or running numbers and they saw what bad people did. Not bad people, bad bettors. The second part is that you suck to begin with, and you finally figured it out.
Exactly. Well, I mean, if you're going to bet and you're going to watch the game, you know how you lost. You know what I mean? Like, you're like, oh, like, like NBA totals. You're like, oh, one team killed the other team. Why did I have the over? It's like that kind of stuff. So then you start to kind of reverse engineer everything based on what you saw. And the next thing you know, I don't know, you get good enough to not lose. Like my whole goal is not necessarily to make money. I just don't want to lose anything. I don't want to deposit. I just want to literally just have my account that I can just always gamble with. And that's, if I can do that, then that's a success.
If I were to ask you about your wagering pie chart, how do you think it breaks down between straights, totals, props? I don't think you're a parlay guy anymore, given the way you just sort of told that story, but I'm guessing it's a combination of straights, totals, and props. How would you break down the percentages of how often you make these wagers?
I would say it's like 100% props.
Wow.
Like, I mean, literally, I always do player props. Every now and then it would be a team total here and there. But I mean, that to me is a prop too, because, you know, back in the day, there was no team total. Like, you couldn't just bet like the Braves over 3.5 runs. You know what I mean? Like that's relatively new. So to me, that's a prop. But yeah, it's all those. And then I'll do a parlay, but it would be a ridiculous one that I know have no chance of winning. Does that make sense? Like plus 86.60, you know, parlay. And for literally a tenth of what I bet on a straight bet. So it really doesn't matter at the end of the day. Does that make sense at all?
It does. You have to have won one of those, though, at some point. Otherwise, you would stop.
I mean, a lot of people, I mean, I don't bring it up ever, but I did hit a plus 86.60 parlay in the NFL divisional round playoffs. It was four passers to go over 300 yards, I think, or, you know, 325, whatever it was. But you do hit some. I mean, but they're so rare, it's not even funny. Like, the idea that you would think you could regularly do this, you're crazy.
But when you say that, there is a difference between me picking four random things and then four things that have some sort of correlation. Like, I'm guessing you found either elite quarterbacks or quarterbacks that were likely going to be trailing in games given the line. Like, if you take a 6-point or a 7-point underdog and take that quarterback, if they're down 14-0, they're going to be firing that fucking football through the air. So there's correlation there. There's a difference between a blindfolded dart parlay and a parlay that has some semblance of correlation.
Oh, 100%. I mean, it's – I remember I believe Brady was in there. I didn't think they were going to run the ball that game, and I thought they would need points, whatever it was. And then it was the Bills-Chiefs that game. I had both Allen and Mahomes was in it. Those were the last two to close it out. And I can't remember who the first quarterback was, but he was on a team that I thought was going to get rolled. So he's probably going to be throwing all day. And obviously, you're in the playoffs, so it's not a bad quarterback. But, yeah, there was definitely correlations. But, I mean, all the correlation in the world, all you need can just get thrown out the window the second one of those plays starts losing.
I want to talk about the props now, and we tape this on a Tuesday morning. I'm going to try and get it up as soon as possible so people can dive in if they want to on one of your bets or two of your bets today, whatever you're liking. But I know you have a pitcher that you've sort of keyed. It's like a horse race, and you always use this horse. I've been keying Dylan Cease a lot this year because I thought the market was low on him. His strikeout prop, 6.5, 6.5, first couple starts. Then we saw some 7.5s. Eventually, we're going to get to 8.5 on that guy, and then I'll have to recalibrate. But he's been a guy who has gone over in 5 of 6 starts on a strikeout prop. You have another pitcher that you love to play overs. Tell us who it is and why.
So Garrett Whitlock, and I think he's on the bottom part of your Cease kind of ladder there. I don't think the market's caught up to him yet. They can't really because he's just now becoming a starter. But the Red Sox really want the guy to be a starter, and he was coming out of the bullpen. So if you look at his game logs, I mean, the pitch counts are going to be pretty low, but it's gone up each game, and that's what you want to see. So it was like 48, then it went to 61, then it went to in the 70s. He could easily throw 80-something pitches tonight, and he's playing the Braves, who – they've just been you know, strikeout city recently. I mean, we've got guys, I think like there's six or seven guys that could be in the lineup tonight that all strike out 28%+ of the time over the last couple of weeks. I mean, that's like a, that's just a gift. So the idea that we're getting six plus on him at plus money, this is probably the last time that's going to happen. It was plus 134 when I woke up this morning. When I finally got it in, it was plus 108. So, you know, it's already moved. But it's to your point, though, on Cease. You like him at, you know, 6.5, 7.5, 8.5. I think that's going to keep going up on this Whitlock guy, and that's literally how I bet, the same way you do it.
That's a great call. And all of our different networks now, we have certain obligations. Some sites have to use this sports book, and we have to use this sports book. I'm just looking. I love looking at the prop shop, which is ftnbets.com/prop-shop, and it allows you to type in a player's name, type in Whitlock, his name pops up, and it gives you the rundown of all the outs in the American books we'll use. So Bet Rivers over 5.5 plus 118, FanDuel plus 130, DraftKings plus 135, and Caesars this morning was plus 140. So, I mean, why would you make the over bet at plus 118 when you can find plus 140? That's the other side of the equation. You know, get the right bet, but also get the right price. To your point, because I work here at Nesson, and we've got the Red Sox and the Bruins games, and I remember having a conversation with one of the Red Sox analysts about the rotation back in February and March, and I'm throwing out all these names, and I'm like, you know, the rotation can be good, but I'm not so sure that there's that power pitcher that can strike guys out. And the guy looks at me and says, Garrett Whitlock. I said, he's in the bullpen. He's one of their best relievers. He said, no, they are going to use him as a starter. That is the organizational plan. And like you said, they can't really over-adjust these strikeout totals because every wise guy in the world is going to whack him under 7.5. I think that's a slow build to the right number with a guy that the general public doesn't know about. Is that fair?
Yeah, no, 100%. I mean, you can't just throw 7.5 on him right now. Like, that's just not – that'll get bet down, and then they'll bet the other side of it. You know, like, they'll just get killed doing that. So they have to go up with what their – I mean, I guess their algorithm tells them to do, I guess. But, I mean, again, you can't make a number on a guy who hasn't thrown 80 pitches yet, even though I think we know what we're going to see if he does throw 80 pitches. So I'll buy into that upside. But as the book, they can't buy into that. They just have to throw the number out there.
Yeah, it's a lot unlike a spread or a total or a first quarter, first half number because they are guessing. I mean, the books are guessing. As players, we are guessing more than the books. But this is a situation where the sports book is sort of trying to figure it out as the public figures it out. But in your write-up, I'm reading it right now on oddschecker.com, the guys in this lineup, Austin Riley, Adam Duvall, Dansby Swanson, Ronald Acuna, Travis d'Arnaud, Travis Demeritt, all guys 28% strikeout guys over the last couple of weeks. So it's a combination of a pitcher that strikes out a lot of guys and a lineup that swings and misses a whole lot. I'm curious now, you know, I don't want to make you be pick guy because I don't make people make all these picks on Chicken Dinner, but how does that process in the morning start for you? Like you wake up, you have your coffee, your breakfast, or whatever, and then you are going through multiple websites. You're finding high EV strikeout guys with high strikeout lineups. How does the combination come together for you when you get your bets?
I find the book I like to go to the most for ladders. That's FanDuel. That's just the one I start looking at first. It doesn't really necessarily mean you're going to play there. But you start looking at anybody that's 5+. And then now you're going to have another screen up with MLB.com. You're going to go to player stats, player hitting stats, and then you're just going to go into the expanded side. It's going to be the strikeout percentage. And then you're just going to do it over the last 2 weeks, over the last week, over the season, just to see, you know, like if there's a pattern emerging from the team that this pitcher with 5+ at plus money is going to be pitching against. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So now you're narrowing down basically the matchups you're looking for. Cause I'm not really looking for a guy that's, you know, 7.5, 8, 8.5. Cause I mean, that's where you're getting, you really got to thread the needle on those. Even if it is a good pitcher, you know, like a strikeout guy, like, you know, the guy in San Francisco. It's Carlos Rodon. I'm trying to think other guys. Like, you know, I'd stay away from those just because, I mean, the guy has to strike out like 9 or 10 people. But you can find value on guys that they could easily strike out 8 or 9 guys tonight, but you're going to get paid for it if they do. So that's how you're going to find a place, a spot like tonight with the Braves. Those guys could strike out 8 or 9 times. I mean, we just saw a Milwaukee pitcher, Lauer, get him for 20 strikes swinging in a game. Burns got him for like 15 or 17. I mean, that's crazy. Whitlock just had 10 in his last game, so he could be up there in that range. Both of those guys got like 8 or 9 people that day.
So it sounds like it's more about the number than it is the name. You're looking for attainable strikeout numbers, and you're probably never going to pay a tax on a name. Let's give a guy out like Garrett Cole or Shane Bieber. You're not going to get 5.5, 6.5 on those guys. You're avoiding the taxable guys, looking for the attainable guys, but it's more about the number than the name.
Yeah, I don't care about the name. The name, whatever. That's how they can kill you, actually, the books, because you're like, oh, I'll take that, you know, over 9.5. And you're like, dude, you just bet a guy to get double-digit strikeouts tonight. You know what I mean? Like, so, yeah, you want to just avoid the name totally. The numbers on that name are going to tell you everything you need to know when you go to his baseball reference page, go to the game logs. Like, you'll find out everything you need to know about that guy right there. But you don't have to worry about the name.
I'm curious your thoughts on, you know, the space in general and the way that we watch sports. And you and I were talking a little bit before I hit record. I did a radio hit last night in Chicago with an older host who doesn't bet, and he's like, I hate that it's everywhere. And I said, look, man, you might want to stop watching sports because it isn't going anywhere. And I go back to the old Ted Leonsis quote, the owner of the Caps and the Mystics and the Washington Wizards, and he said that sports betting companies and sports betting information companies will soon be more important than beer and liquor companies. And the host went, he said that? I said, yeah, he said that. So when the owner of 3 sports teams says it, that's the future.
It's over, man. Like, it really is. Like, sports, like, the love of sports, all that kind of stuff, it's over. Like, it's never going back to, you know, fans. It's going to be gamblers. I mean, that's all you see on any broadcast now. And I think this is just the beginning. Like, they're going to find a way to work gambling in even more. I mean, wait till it's legal in every state and every, you know, every arena, every stadium. There's going to be kiosks everywhere, people betting everywhere. Everyone knows the lines. I'm talking like little kids will know the lines.
Your kids probably know the lines.
Yeah, they do. Like, they know, like last night they knew we needed Drew Holiday to score at least 22 points or we have to move. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just joking. But yeah, they knew 22 points. Like, they'll be watching football with me sometimes and be like, oh, he only needs 5 more yards. And I'm just looking at it, like, it seems like Cassidy, my 8-year-old. And I'm just like, dude, you're an 8-year-old and you know that this guy needs 5 more yards. Like, that's awesome.
Mommy, why does daddy's favorite team change every night?
Literally. Someone asked me the other day, like, who's your favorite team? It was on our Sharp Bets Today show on Oddschecker. And I was just like, I don't have a favorite team anymore. Like, I'm in Tewksbury, Massachusetts, so we root for the Patriots. And, like, that's the game that's on Sundays. But, like, we care about the Celtics, I guess. And, we like, the Bruins, don't get me wrong. Like, that's probably upper echelon of, like, what we care about over here. But I have no allegiance to any of these teams. And it's kind of crazy because I used to.
Yeah, and I get it out here. The instances when I pick against the Patriots or the Celtics or the Bruins, I work at a station that is mostly New England people that were born and raised here. And say the Bruins are playing the Islanders or whatever in the playoffs last year, and I'm like, I'm going to take the Isles. Oh, you must hate the Bruins, Chicago kid. I'm like, that's literally not what it is. One team is overpriced. One team isn't. That's it.
Yeah, I go through that. I'm from Florida, and I've only been up here since 2008, and they absolutely love their Patriots, Red Sox, Bruins, Celtics here. So the second you say, like, you have a bet on the other side of one of those games, you're going to hear it no matter what.
Yeah, Tatum under 28.5 last night. He had 8 at half, I think. He had 20 with 7 minutes to go. And then a Celtics fan just hops into the DMs. That's what you get for hating Jason Tatum. I'm like, all right, that's where we're at. You mentioned the Whitlock over, 5.5 plus money. Is there anything else early on a Tuesday that you're circling or know that you're probably going to play tonight?
I kind of wanted Hunter Green just because he's fun for the Reds. But his number is starting to get out of control now. He just went against the Brewers, only lasted 2.2 innings last time, but got like 7 strikeouts. But now his 6-plus is minus 122, which for me, that's a no-go. But I mean, that was one that I was definitely looking at. The Brewers, they look like they're blindfolded up there sometimes. Like they're just swinging.
That minus sign just makes you crazy. I can hear it. You won't like this. Well, I love Minnesota Wild tonight in hockey, but that's minus money. But one of my buddies said, hey, why don't you just do this? Lay the puck and a half. You can lay 1.5 goals with Minnesota plus 185.
Yeah.
See, I can hear it in your voice. And a lot of these games, they haven't been close, man. I think there have been 3 overtime games so far this postseason. These teams are winning, and they're winning decidedly. And when a team's up 1 in hockey, the other team's going to pull the goalie, so that empty netter is very likely. Could we call this a combo bet? Will we ride together on Minnesota minus a puck and a half?
I mean, the plus 185, I mean, you had me there. That's all I needed to hear. It's like plus 185, let's parlay that. No.
I got him in the series minus 30, so now it's 2-2. It's game 5 at home. It's a big one, and I like Minnesota a lot. Alex Smith is a hockey handicapper I talk to very, very frequently, and he thinks they're going to take down Colorado in the next round.
Ooh.
I'm not there yet, but that's going to be – I mean, that series price is going to be 2-1 or higher on Minnesota.
Yeah.
So that's a team that I've sort of followed. That's my – who's my favorite hockey team? Minnesota.
Nice.
Put it that way.
The team with a plus in front of their odds for every series. You know what I mean? Like, I love those teams. No, hockey is a great sport to bet, especially playoff time, because those games, they're like wars, like on ice, like every game. And, I mean, it's always good. There's always plus money opportunities that you can find and get behind. I'm more of an entertainment guy, right? Like, I'm gonna sit down to watch the game. I'm going to have some cash on it. But, again, it's not going to be enough to affect, like, my net worth or anything. You know what I mean? It's just going to be – I could get rolled and then just go to bed and not have a problem with it. Does that make sense?
That's and a if perfect I win, way to put it.
Yeah. If I win, then I'm juiced up, you know, I'm happy about it, but it is what it is. I'm on to the next day. That way I can just gamble literally for every day for the rest of my life. And that's my strategy. But hockey's a great way to do that because again, if you like I said, if you had 2 bets tonight, one's a plus money or both are plus money bets. You just got to win one. You made a little change. You just go to bed, and now you're on to the next day.
You've come a long way from the guy that was parlaying the Yankees and the Dodgers and the Red Sox, aren't you?
Oh, man. Those were fun days, though. I won't lie to you. Like that, I still am kind of like that. Like I never thought I was going to lose, like ever. Like, I mean, you could have the Yankees minus 1.5 for minus 150 in a parlay. They're down 9-2 in the bottom of the ninth, and I'm still thinking we could win. You know what I mean? Like, oh, all we need is a couple hits, you know, maybe a grand slam walk-off. You know what I mean? Like, there was fun in that. Just the problem was the money aspect wasn't sustainable.
John Hyslop joining us from Odds Checker. Please follow our guy at Slop Rules. He loves Garrett Whitlock's over tonight, and we're going to tag team the Minnesota Wild. He didn't know that when he woke up this morning, but now he's a Minnesota Wild fan by 2 goals or more. I appreciate you hopping on. Keep up the good work, man, and let's do this again soon.
Thanks for having me on, Sam.
That about does it for Chicken Dinner. Thanks to John Hyslop for hopping on the show. Record check. After the Tatum loss last night, 249, 257, and 8, up 6.1. Got 2 hoppers right now. Minnesota to win the series, minus 130. And I guess I'll say this one more time. Dylan Cease to win the Cy Young at 8-1. Played that early last week. Coming up on the show, we're going to dive inside the WNBA. One of the sharpest WNBA handicappers I know, Kevin Hogan, is going to join the show. And we will chop it up. Who does he like in the early parts of the season? And is there value on some longer shots down the sheet? You know, the Sun, and the Aces and the Storm are going to get a lot of money in those future markets. What about the middle of the pack, the second and third and fourth tiers? Is there any money to be made? We'll find out when we talk to Kevin coming up on the show. Cash some tickets, make some money. We'll talk to you next time right here on Chicken Dinner. Broken dreams.